Hello, hello, people. We are back. Season two, no longer the Mojo Podcast. We have switched up our name. Welcome to Last Call with Joe Bailon. Cue for audience. I did it. Yeah, I had to change the name. It needed to happen. As much as I love the Mojo and my business does still exist, I wanted a name that let people know that we are an F&B, a food and beverage podcast, you know? It needed to be in the name. And of course, I'm here with the one and only Siad Reed, my producer. How are you?
What's up, Joe?
You're looking good.
Thank you. I
appreciate
it. Look
at you.
It's been a while since I've been over here in the BK area.
In Brooklyn. Yeah. It's nice. I had the vibes going. I was like, let me get some fruit assortments, some coffee. Today I have a cheese platter for you because we've got a special guest. We'll get into that.
Yeah. You had this whole event catered. Like this is pretty dope.
Catered by the Mojo.
Love it.
Well, I'm super excited to be back for season two. I didn't plan on, you know, splitting it up in seasons, but life happens and it's hard to be consistent with a monthly podcast, especially when you don't have a sponsor. But you know, we'll get there. Let's talk about what we've been up to.
Let's do it.
Who have I been?
That's a good question. I've just been doing the Continuum A thing. Shout out to all my current and new clients. The big news is I have a trip coming up this Monday.
You do?
I am. I'm going away. I'm going to the Sudan and Cairo, Egypt, and I am jacked. So I'm flying out there this Monday for 2 weeks to shoot a trailer for a documentary about women's liberation in countries where it's not so great to be a woman, unfortunately.
Wow, look at you. Yeah. So woke. So feminist.
Well, yeah, I mean, I my mom's a woman, so yeah, I love her.
That's how it works.
Yeah, usually.
Some people don't love their mamas. Yeah,
that's true. So yeah, I'm super excited about that. I've never been to that part of the world to actually see the pyramids. I'm excited. I think it's one of those experiences where you think you know how you're going to feel or react, but I think once you see something that's, you know, 8,000 years old in the middle of the desert or what have you.
And you grow up hearing about it your whole life, of course, and
yeah, it's
you
one
never
of those
think you're going to be there until you're there.
You're standing in front of the Sphinx. So, yeah, I'm super excited. I've had to, you know, I've got to do all my shots, you know, malaria and Hep A and typhoid. I mean, it's just wild. I've never had to do shots.
My dad got malaria in Africa.
Oh Jesus!
And it turned into lupus.
Oh goodness! No, we're not doing that. So yeah, so I'm doing all the prep work. I'm doing all my research. I had to get a ton of new camera gear. I'm super excited about that. Shout out to the pandemic and all the delays and deliveries because that was stressful. But thankfully, there are companies that offer really good used equipment that's already in the United States, so you don't have to worry about, you know, things getting shipped to you. So anyway, I'm super excited about that, and just been busy, been working, homie, and you know, trying to stay slim and trim.
And like truly sticking to it.
Truly sticking to it.
You're looking good. He walked in and I was like, where's the rest of you? Because he just became a whole new person in the last season and a half since we've seen each other.
I left it in Rochelle.
Bye. New me. I love it.
Yeah. What you been up to?
Oh, you know, just slanging that thing. I've been onboarding some new team members for the Mojo, just making sure that I'm not wearing myself thin on all levels. You know, starting a business, I definitely tried to, and of course, I'm a little bit of a control freak. I was trying to keep and wear all hats, and just recognizing that, you know, I wasn't playing my best self on all levels. So I was like, I need to just bite the bullet and get some team members who can really have my back and making sure that the business and the overall workflow is going and being executed properly.
Listen, the first step is knowing you have a problem. So I think knowing that you have a self-control problem and not allowing other people to help you.
Right.
That's a good step.
I mean, not bad for my Latina self. I think, you know, my ancestors might be proud, or maybe they might be really upset. One of the two.
Well, I think once they see the success.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, I've also kind of started this little baby passion project called Perreo Intenso.
Jesus.
I try not to post too much of it, but that's a lie.
That is a damn lie. And I follow all of it.
So I started this passion project called Perreo Intenso, which translates to intense dancing in English.
No. I looked it up. That's not what it means. But we can move on from that.
Perreo means to dance dirty, you know, dirtyful. And it's essentially grinding, you know, New York people would call it dubbing. But it's this culture of reggaeton style dancing and music. And so during the pandemic over the summer, of course, New York went bananas. I knew it would. I called it. I said it in our first trailer. But New York went crazy and there was so many events in the lower and in Brooklyn, which is where I reside. And I just felt like there wasn't enough Latino representation. Of course, there is a lot of Latino people that live out here. There just wasn't enough events that I felt were focused towards the Latin culture as much as there were like specific African parties or dance hall or reggae. I wasn't seeing, you know, salsa night. I wasn't seeing bachata night. And so I decided to create a event party series called Perreo Intenso, where we throw monthly Latinx parties in different locations. And that does also mean different cities. So we've had two events so far, Perreo Intenso Volume 1 and Volume 2.
I love how it's a mixtape.
Thank you. Thank you. I knew you. I felt like the OGs would like it because a lot of it is paying homage to the old school, like, basement dance parties that we
and that's the vibe
to.
Like from the pictures on the IG, like I'm like, where is it? It looks like the basement of a warehouse because it looks like it's a big space, but it's very minimalist to say the least, and a lot of sweat.
On the first event, I brought two shirts and sweated through both of them. I also ripped my pants at the first event. We always recommend minimal clothing because you're there to dance. You're not there to like look around on your phone. You are there to shake what your mama gave you, to all the old school Latin songs.
Do you have a basket at the front to collect phones?
No. Okay. That's a lot. That's a lot of responsibility and insurance issues I'd probably have to deal with as well. But no, it's been beautiful. I didn't anticipate it to be receiving as much love as it has been. I'm kind of feeling out of body experience with it still. I'm like, oh my God, am I really like
A party promoter?
Like, who am I, you know? And I think my favorite part about it though is that it's female owned. People walk in there and they say hi to my boys, but they don't. And the boys will be like, oh, this is Joe. She is the creator of the events.
Right.
And people are like, oh, you? And I think that's also like, I'm kind of doing this in a very male dominated industry. So that's also a really cool part about it. And I'm Mexican. A lot of people would assume that someone running a Perreo Intenso event is from the islands, and that's not really the case. It really just came down from my passion for love and music and bringing the Latin community together. It's still part of the mojo.
And showing stomachs, by the way.
And showing stomachs and working it out. But it's been really great. We have another one coming up called Espooky Perreo, which is a play on Latin verbiage. I think Latin moms and women always put an E before every S word. So it's like especial. Stephanie, you know, sorry.
my question is, all right, obviously, you know, wardrobe is minimalist. Are you encouraging people to dress up for like Halloween?
Oh, for the Halloween party? Yes, absolutely. Okay. So, you know, it'll be like minimal clothing Halloween.
Sexy ghost.
Well, I only recommend it is because the first one, a couple of us almost had like a heat stroke, but mind you, it was still hot during that time. ACs were busting. Like it was hot.
Do you have fans in the basement down there?
It is in a basement actually at the location we were using. It was like a regular venue, but the whole purpose is to switch venues and switch cities. I have hopes of doing Art Basel. I have hopes of doing a Tulum takeover. So, you know,
I see all of it.
I think it could happen.
No, it is. It's already happened.
It's already happening. Yeah. It's in the stars. So yeah, that's what I've been up to. You know, prepping to onboard some new clients that I'm really passionate about, and taking care of the current ones that I have, and just evolving, expanding. And I think, you know, we're all in this to just become our best optimum selves.
I agree. I feel like our higher selves are like looking down and just like super proud of us right now.
Yeah. If not looking down, then sitting side by side, because I'm pretty fucking close to mine.
That's true. That's a good point. I like that visual.
Yeah. Well, I'm super excited to be back season two. I feel really passionate about what we have on the roster for this season. Some really awesome people that I want to share with my small but ever-growing community. And then the support on the Mojo social media page has just been immaculate. I'm super happy. We just hit 1K, and I know this ain't a number, but like, it's a cute number. I like it. I like it a lot. Thank you. That was very necessary. So I'm just really excited for the future of the business and nothing but good things to come.
How are your cats?
Which ones?
Well, I saw that you adopted a cat, or you were watching over?
I've been fostering cats. Mm. I have a generously sized apartment here in Brooklyn, and I have one cat who I rescued. I found her digging for trash right before the pandemic hit, and I've just kind of developed this love for like taking care of broken things that aren't men.
It's like, there's so many ways she's going to take this, but go ahead.
You're like, let her rip. So there's just been a lot of kittens and cats in the neighborhood. I've been paying attention to a lot of rescuers, you know, giving back to the community. And I'm lucky enough to be able to work from home, run my business from home. When we do need to do team meetings, we get together at like a common workspace. But for the most part, I'm here. I'm chilling. I'm kicking it with my babies. And so I've started fostering, and it's been really nice. It's been a really nice experience. I didn't think I'd get so emotional parting ways with some of them, but I'm really channeling into this new 30-year-old Joe that I am.
Cat mom Joe?
Cat mom Joe.
I like it.
Josie and the Pussycats.
Is that a Halloween thing?
I think it might have to, especially this year, even though I feel like I've been a cat for like 95% of my life.
Do you think in your former life you were a cat?
Not until now. Jesus. No, I think actually in my past life, I think I might have been like a chola.
What's that? For those that don't know, a chola.
A chola is like one of those like gangster LA.
Oh, yeah.
Women with like low riders. And
why
like,
don't you be that?
I have been that too.
Oh, all right.
And I do it really well.
Actually, you have a bandana right next to you.
I have a bandana right next to me. I have a grill that I'll put on too. I do like the whole like payasa clown face.
Yes.
I really channel into this. That's why I feel my most
authentic.
Are
your pants above your belly button?
Yup. I button it at the top. My flannel right at the top. I do a little.
Got your chucks on?
Of course. Obi.
Okay.
Or Vans.
Vans, right.
But yeah, no, I've been a cool cat mom.
Also, can we give a shout out to the coffee?
Oh my gosh. I put Ciad on today. So in the past, we've enjoyed other coffee.
We're not even dropping names. I was going to say hashtag team.
Well, we were.
Okay.
I'm no longer that team. So okay. I don't even want to go back there.
I don't either.
We are now enjoying Dominican coffee, Santo Domingo coffee. And Ciad looks like he just saw like angels today. He's just like loving life right now.
So I like to drink my coffee black because I want to taste the bean. Very much how, you know, you love your F&B for, you know, you want to know the ingredients, you want to know the flavors. I used to love my coffee. How do you say it? Café con leche?
Exacto. Bravo. Oh, míralo.
Okay. But yeah, a lot of cream, a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
And I would have like two or three of them a day just because it tasted like candy. It tasted good.
It's so good.
And it was always Dunkin' Donuts, unfortunately, because we live in New York. Right. And then one day I was like, I'm having too much sugar right now. So I had Dunkin' Donuts coffee black and I was like, oh, this is gross. This is not what coffee should taste like. So then I just went to the extreme the other way and I started looking for good coffee beans and so on and so forth. So now I drink my coffee, you know, black. And when I find a good coffee, I'm like, what is this magic?
Yeah. I was introduced to this coffee recently. One of my friends from the Bronx, obviously, brought me some Santo Domingo coffee. And since then, I've just been hooked. And I like switching up my coffees too, like per seasons. I definitely sometimes I'll dabble in things that are a little bit more expensive, more local, more artisanal. Of course, the brown girl inside of me is like, yes, Santo Domingo and DR coffee. I'm such a fan. It's speaking on things that have to do with intention and flavors and really paying attention to our palate. I'm super excited about today's guest. We've got one of my clients today. Her name is Kira James, founder of Own Your Funk. And she's really about education and empowerment and teaching the BIPOC community how to understand and break down the flavor profiles of cheese and how it relates to who they are deep down inside and keeping it funky with themselves. But we'll get into that shortly.
Can't wait. I love it. I'm a big fan of cheese, and I see the spread you got out here today, and we're gonna dabble a little bit.
We just started and you've put in a lot of work and damage into this board. So
I didn't eat breakfast.
No, honestly, I'm not gonna lie. It was also me.
Oh yeah. It was actually mostly her.
Amazing. So here we have Kira James.
Hey.
Say hello. Is this your first podcast?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
my first podcast.
Goodness. So very exciting stuff.
Very exciting.
You look good on my couch.
Nice. Thank you. I feel good. I feel good behind this mic looking at you.
I love it. I love it. Of course, Kira James is one of my clients. It's been really awesome working with her and honestly just learning a shit ton about what she has to teach. So Kira James, I'm going to just call you by your full name. Kira,
a lot of people do.
Kira James.
It rolls off the tongue.
It does. It's good. So you are a cheesemonger.
I am.
And I've known you as a cheesemonger for a couple years now. And I really just was excited to get you on the air to talk about your business because my gosh, I'm super excited about it. Like not even just the fact that I work with you, but it's such a great story and a mission. And I only want to work with people that have really cool stories and missions. So I think
same.
We're two peas in a pod.
Yes, ma'am.
But I really want you to have a platform where you can talk about you and tell your story because there's not a lot of you. You are a badass black and queer cheesemonger. We met in Boston and now we both are living in the New York area. You live in Jersey. We won't talk about that though.
I'm just around.
You're around.
I don't live anywhere right now.
You're a floater.
Yeah.
I like that for you.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about your background, kind of where it started. I think you're from Connecticut, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
We'll start with the food career. After post-Syracuse, post-shot put track and field career there, I developed adult onset food allergies, really is where it goes down to. Okay. So my early 20s, just got back from Tanzania and discovered I couldn't eat certain things. And so had to be much more mindful about what I'm putting into my body. So that kind of triggered an obsession with the Food Network. So that's kind of where my food journey starts. I don't have a fluffy tale of like falling in love with food. I love my mom's cooking throughout childhood. I have connections to Southern African-American cuisine for sure. But my love for food really started to happen when I had to cook for myself and really be gentle with what I was putting in my body.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
That'll really do it. Adulting as fuck.
Exactly. Right. And so at this early 20s in New York City, you know, not knowing what to do after, you know, track and field, like, what am I doing here? My brother was like, you know, I was there too. And he was an architect and miserable and loved sneakers and went back to school for sneaker design. And he was like, what do you love, Kier? You know, figure out what you love in life and pursue that. So I found this random program at Boston University called a master's in gastronomy. Nothing to do with the intestines or your digestive system. Gastronomy is basically food and culture studies. So a lot of social sciences, anthropology, sociology, all around food. So basically what the dinner table did for human interaction, what fire did for mankind, those types of things that I went to school for. And so I love my brother for that moment. It definitely was a life-changing decision to go back to school for something I had no education on, but they didn't require any testing to get in. You just go to school. So I was like, Boston, I guess that's where I'm at. I got to Boston and I needed a part-time job and I started at Formaggio Kitchen in the South End. Very randomly, students in the program were like, oh my God, Formaggio Kitchen is like the best store there is.
How Boston.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, how lucky of you to be there. And I was like, well, is this? It looks like a a really crowded store with a bunch of stuff no one's ever heard of. Like, what is this place? But
it's a cute store.
It's
though.
Amazing.
In a very nice neighborhood.
Formaggio Kitchen has their own direct importing licensing. What that means is they can bring in any product from anywhere around the world by themselves. They don't need a distributor or importer to do so. They just do it all themselves, which means those little products on the shelves that look random are from these small producers that you can't get anywhere else in America. So I figured that out quickly. And it was really fun to have those experiences while also learning about food for the first time.
Right.
And making those connections to cheese. So Formaggio being a cheese importer and cheese specialty shop first, that's where my love for cheese started. Really understanding the importance of knowing where your food comes from, which I was already doing through my own personal work. But now seeing it done through people's livelihood. Mm. These farmers, these animals have been doing it for centuries. And it's the only way that they survive. And it's my job to then sell it to people to appreciate it and hold the same value that the farmer had when they made it. Right. And so figuring that out early on as a monger was why I stuck around and in and out of the cheese industry throughout the years, helping build various educational programs and a few different cheese shops kind of landed me in this weird place. So yeah.
Wow. Wait, now that you mention all this, I think we fell in love with cheese at the same time because you were working across the street from me mm-hmm. when we first met. Mm-hmm. We must have met like maybe 5-6 years ago in Boston.
I mean, it's like
was it that
9
long ago?
Now, probably.
No. Really?
Probably.
No.
I wish I could see your face. Her eyebrows went up and down like 9
balls.
Times.
But anyway. You were working at Formaggio there, across yes. the street from me. Mm-hmm. I was working at Copa at the time. I was a supervisor there. And that is where I fell in love with cheese because Formaggio provided cheese to Copa.
Yes.
And we were constantly running back and forth across the street.
Need a pound of cheese, Kira.
Yeah, like we need to grab a cheese, you know, like if a dish was out of something last minute, we were constantly running back. Or sometimes the mongers
We'd
would come over
bring it to you.
They'd
yeah.
come in an apron back and forth, you know, and I loved that. That was actually the time when I fell in love with the industry. So it seems like we were kind of both.
Yeah. Boston has a love for food that really I haven't seen anywhere else, you know. Like a lot of artisan foods come out of the Massachusetts area and just people love food there. And I learned that.
I've been saying this.
Living there is a different whole thing, but supporting the food scene, nothing like it.
Yeah, totally. I definitely agree. It's my favorite thing to do. Every time I go back, I'm like, okay, I have a list of 5 places I must eat at and that's it. Like, you know, and Formaggio is always on the stop. I go to Copa, Formaggio, and then the puppy bakery spot that's right there mm-hmm. in the corner. I'm like, I cannot
polka
come
dog.
Back. Yeah, polka dog. Yeah. I cannot come back without treats from my cat. Yeah, I mean, those days too were also kind of crazy. You know, we were deep in the industry and something about the culture too just felt very intense. There was a dive bar near us in Formaggio by Copa. It's on Chaumet Ave, guys. All right, we're shouting out Chaumet Ave right here, the South End. But that whole area was beautiful restaurants. But there was this signature dive bar, Franklin Cafe, that we used to go to and I also worked at. And we would just go there and get hammered and have the time of our lives and, you know, wake up at 3 the next morning and do it again.
And we were all doing it together. I mean, it was definitely, you know, mid-20s, you know, the lifestyle is definitely a hard lifestyle, but I loved parts of it, but definitely was at the end of it, you know, to my demise, kind of
toxic,
settling into, to my issues with substances, you know, definitely being in the food industry, as everyone listening probably knows, is a tough industry. You know, your hours are off and you're around these things and these substances and they help you keep going.
Yeah, it helps you get through the day.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
but
you know, deal with people.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Exactly.
And we all kind of handle it at our own pace and some kind of coast and some kind of, you know, fall off the grid.
Exactly.
So fall off. So is like mental health something that you're passionate about? I know you touched base on it a lot.
Yeah, definitely. So to kind of like circle back to like my story, being mm-hmm. in the Boston area and kind of loving cheese, loving the food also meant that I was living a hard life and drinking a lot. So 2017, I made some transitions out from behind the counter, you know, working on myself. I got a job at the Boston Center for Adult Education. Running their food and wine class program. So just more class programming and 9-to-5, hoping the structure can really get me back focused, but it didn't. And I ended up having to do a couple different types of rehabs. And I did an inpatient program July of 2019, all for alcohol. And so now I'm 2 years and 4 months sober. And that's something I've will continue to advocate for. I always say everyone could benefit from 28-35 days away, whatever context that is, suit yourself. But even like aside from that, just I followed all the things. When I got out of rehab, I went to a sober house for 6 months and I did a program at McLean in Massachusetts, which is a mental health program. And boy, I had no idea how strong the brain was. You know, it's a strong muscle that we never really get exercise or training on. Mm. And so mental health, I think it's a hard sell, especially in the communities in which I want to do my work in. Mental health is just not something that people deal with. Look into those substances that I looked to years ago. Mm-hmm. So really just finding a new way to talk about mental health. But yeah, I definitely want to keep that at the forefront always, because it's the root of everyone's problem. And as much as you don't want to admit it, it is. The brain is a muscle you don't get to control.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's been, you know, I just hit 30 and I think a lot of the things that I've been thinking about as well is reparenting myself from just little toxic traits that we learn from our families as well. In the Latino culture, there's something called, you know, la chancla, which means you're about to get hit by a sandal. And it's always been like something that we joke about, but it's getting to a point where like la chancla culture is being canceled within the new generations of Latin parenting. Mm. And so I think I also see this happening in BIPOC communities where we're definitely prioritizing our mental health and the way we raise our children. And I think especially after the presidency that we recently endured, a lot of things came to surface and we realized a lot of the deep-rooted racism and societal issues in our community. And so there's just a much larger emphasis on mental health and the way we raise the generation below us.
Definitely. And again, just like putting it in the front, you know, just acknowledging its presence and then how, and then working it with your life. I think people think mental health has to be like the end all, has to change who you are. You have to conform to it. You have to just do things you don't want. But really it's just like a matter of like holding it close to you at all the time and just not forgetting about it, you know, because it's easy to forget thinking you got it down pat, but we each have 70,000 plus thoughts a day. You're not controlling all of those. So
yeah, for sure. On our first season, we had Chef Mo, who comes from the kitchen and the volatility that can happen within kitchen culture. She's also very hip. We talked based on substance use. Is there any organizations that you can think of that you just want to point people towards who perhaps are still in the midst of substance abuse within the industry and even outside of the industry, let's be honest. But since we're speaking on F&B, it's something highly neglected. Was there any guidance or any organizations that were of solace to you in this process?
Love that. I did a lot of self-work. So it was a lot of just like, learning to work with my negative automatic thoughts and practicing different techniques to combat the negative talks within myself. Beyond that, I did some work with Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-hmm. And I also have been to a few meetings with Ben's Friends, which is the food and beverage industry specific substance abuse nonprofit. Ben's Friends is incredible. Bigger representation in larger cities. So definitely if you're in larger cities, look to those organizations. But online communities, again, mad silver linings through this pandemic. You know, the virtual space in recovery is thriving and strong. There are a lot of different organizations mixing work together. So yoga, mental health, if you're in the Boston area, You Good Sis is an organization run by two young women, African-American women, where it's yoga focused, but they do a lot of work with just like, You Good Sis, like you want to talk about it?
That's such a good name.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And so I feel like just asking and reaching out to people out there that may be talking about it, you know, there's lots of self-care and acknowledgement of one's flaws on social media. And so just the person's putting it out there because they want you to engage with it, you know? So if you see a friend talking about their issues that you can connect with, I don't see why you just reach out to your friend, you know, and say, hey, what are you doing?
For sure.
We got to just talk about things more. We got to just be more open with our insecurities and everyone will be supportive. Like, you know, we're also scared of what someone might think of us or how they might react to it. But like, if we all just put our stuff out in front, nothing to react to.
Yeah, that's totally true. I mean, I think a lot of the substance abuse culture within the F&B industry, I mean, mind you, it still exists, but the fact that I think a lot less businesses are functioning till 4 or 5 a.m. Might be of aid. I've just been paying attention to how people or how employees' lifestyles have changed since the pandemic and how their use of substances has adjusted as well with that. You know, I am a retired bartender and I hardly drink much these days. A lot of my friends who are also beverage directors and my peers, they're like, yeah, we, you know, I don't really even drink that much. And so I'm just like, fuck, like the pandemic really did this to us. But also when we do want to enjoy, you know, we can enjoy it and be responsible.
And I still teach about wine in my classes. I still work for a brewery time and again. You know, I still can value and see it. Some people's bodies just can't handle it anymore. Yeah. And I think the problem with addiction is people assume it's something that you can control. And it's so not that. And I feel like, you know, I don't want to say all the lines from AA and all that jazz, but like, their truth points where like, you really just have to like admit it to yourself. And then that's all, you know, beyond that, you know, you're free to just do your thing.
Were your friends supportive through the process? Your family, are they still existent?
Of course. My friends and family were like, about damn time, girl. I mean, I had been talking about getting myself together for years. Part of my kind of paralysis and being in Boston for so long was combating my mental issues and not really knowing what to do or who to ask for help, since I didn't think anyone around me could really relate to it.
Everybody in that whole room was relating to you.
Yeah.
You know, I was also kind of experimenting and dabbling with my own mental health. And little did we know, we were all grazing shoulders with each other, you know? So everyone in those rooms that we would hang out with were
But my friends and family, I mean, they were just supportive of it. You know, there's connections to your genetics with addiction. Yeah. So once my parents had education on that, their minds were blown and their drinking behaviors changed because there's a big part of it that comes from your genes, unfortunately. And then my friends, they're just proud that I realize that I'm the same person sober. I think people, especially in the food industry, who are social and feel like maybe they're introverted naturally, but they're in this environment where you have to be social. Alcohol will give you that in a jiff. But I think like that for me, I realized getting sober, I was like, oh, I'm still like the same rambunctious, you know, out of control, wild, crazy, funny person that I was drinking. I just, you know, hid behind that. And I feel like a lot of times, like, it's easy to do that. The hard thing is to not have the thing to be hidden behind. And so, well, that wasn't right.
No, it makes sense.
It's hard. The hardest thing is not to be hidden. Yeah, just be fully exposed and vulnerable. And I feel like,
But that's also adulthood, and I like that for us. We're doing it.
We're
out here doing it. That was a high five.
The more people that do it, solid high five. The more of us that do it, you know, the more people see it's normal and start a movement and empowered people.
For sure. So for people who don't know, we're going to segue out of that. We first connected, of course, we met back in Boston. We've distanced and grown and moved in life. And you reached out to me probably early spring, telling me about this new business venture that you had. But before we even get into that, you are a cheesemonger. Please just tell us what a cheesemonger is, because a lot of my audience, including myself at the time, did not and does not know.
Yes. So a cheesemonger is a profession that in Europe is well-respected and a career decision. So basically it's somebody who takes care of and sells cheese, or a trader of cheese if you're not exchanging money, but essentially the keeper of cheese. So you're not the one making the cheese or necessarily taking care of it, but you're the one selling the cheese. And so our job is to sell the cheese in the right condition, in the right way, to respect the animals and the farmers that make the cheese. So there are cheesemongers at Whole Foods and any cheese counter. There's someone there that's knowledgeable of cheese, can help pick cheeses out for you. But even aside from that, they're taking care of the cheese. So when it's not being purchased by anyone, they're cleaning it and they're taking care of it, again, to keep the prestige and the respect that the cheesemaker originally wanted.
Yeah, the integrity of the products and the animals.
Exactly.
And I love that. So tell me, what is this business you've started? I mean, I could talk about it, but I want you to.
Of course.
Let's talk about your venture, Own Your Funk.
Yes. So Own Your Funk is a brainchild I've been thinking about for years, sort of looking back to my time when I was drinking. I drank to get out of my funk, something I said a lot. I drank to numb myself. So it's something I really thought about well before actually getting sober. And then the idea to connect it with cheese, that was just always going to be the case. I've been coming and going from the industry for quite some time, but cheese education has always brought me back. I'm currently a virtual events host for Antonelli's Cheese Shop based in Texas. So I've always been teaching. And so starting Own Your Funk, the idea is to bring cheese education in a new way through new types of experiences with a mix of self-empowerment. So Own Your Funk. People ask me, what does that mean? They want me to tell them. And, you know, the whole thing about it is ownership, right? Owning your funk. So funk to me can mean the flavors of cheese. It can be a vibe I'm feeling. It can be music I'm listening to. It can be anything at all. The most important part is that I'm owning it for myself. And so through these experiences that will start out heavy with cheese, because that's where my heart is, through these events, you're going to be learning about cheese and about food, just generally how to move through the world. What you like about cheeses can be applied to all the food you eat, right? And then the overarching goal that I'm not going to really say to anyone ever is that I want you to feel self-empowered to then teach others and just make better food choices and just live a better life.
Yeah. I love
simple,
that.
Simple.
In conversation between you and I, which we have many, you said Own Your Funk is more than just the business. It's a concept.
Exactly.
And that's always stuck with me on how we manage and move forward with the brand together.
Exactly.
And I love that.
Yeah. So, I mean, what's on the horizon is definitely looking to do in-person experiences. So on my way through around the country, starting in Baltimore for a few months, but definitely wanting to do some industry collaborations with current cheese professionals and really talking about cheese in a new way to reach these new demographics of people. Own Your Funk, it's really important to me to work with people of color, not just to educate, but also the people I'm educating.
Mm.
So really empowering and growing the industry in a different way with intent. It's difficult to speak about diversity and DEI, you know, these days, but you need to do it with intent. And being in the industry for 10 years, that's super homogenized. And as much as we're queer, mostly queer people, we're all very much the same. I obviously aesthetically a little bit darker, but definitely very similar. So wanting the industry to change, talking about cheese in a new way, and just seeing what happens from there.
I definitely agree. I just want to circle back to about how you're empowering people to also educate and talk about cheese. It's this little funny ass smile that you give me every time I'm like, look at this cheese that I have. Let me tell you about it. And you just sit in the corner like a proud mom. I'm mm-hmm. like, where's it from, Joe? And I'm like, is it from Roku? And I'm just going to say something stupid now, but it's kind of this proud mama moment that you want to have over your community. And so seeing that look on your face and that joy is also what I get when I teach people about F&B.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that for you, and I can totally relate.
I mean, I've taught like over 1,000 classes at this point, and I love teaching, and I love
you're good at
the
it.
Feedback
you
I
teach
get
me
from people.
Every day.
The problem with the way that I teach for others is really people don't actually learn about the cheese. They're having a fantastic experience. They may learn something, and it's not to anyone's fault. There's a lot to learn. But presenting information in a way that someone can understand it will just give more potential for them to absorb it. Sitting in a cheese 101 class where you're just being spewed out cheese facts in a very specific way, you're going to remember maybe one or two things. But if I'm talking about your senses and flavor first, or music even perhaps, and then back into the cheese knowledge, I'm hopeful that we learn. But yeah, proud mama moments always. And I think I do that because the more you challenge yourself in any environment, the more that'll be applied in your entire life. As a cheesemonger, when I first started, they would be like, what do you taste, Kieran? I'm like, I don't know. Cheese? But the more they'd be like,
milk?
Do you taste almond? Do you taste cashew? Do you taste toasted almond? And the more I did it on my own, the confidence would build. And like that's, and then I could take that confidence and apply it to wine, apply it to beer, apply it to bread, apply it to chocolate. and then buy more consciously and just support those people I know are that are taking care of their products. So it's all connected.
Yeah.
My crazy ways are all connected.
No, it totally does make sense because I do it with my family as well. Like, you know, I get really excited about wines I bring home and I'm like, okay, what do you taste? Like, and they're just like, wine. I'm like, guys, we're more than this. Like, let's be more thoughtful, more intentional with what we're consuming and how we're experiencing it. Like, it is more than just alcohol and grapes and wine. Like, there's, you know, vanilla, there's tobacco, there's like some flavors. Like, it's so exciting. And, you know, it's like, we just want people to love food.
And it's easy. And it's a easy place to start. And I think like right now, coming out of a pandemic, people really want experiences and they want ways to open their mind in new ways of thinking. And so that sort of having the experiences be driven by my passion first makes it easy for me to talk about and hopefully is more just super appealing because everyone loves cheese. Not everyone, but those who love cheese, you know, will appreciate these experiences and whatever way they're sort of like wanting to, I lost. I don't even know what I was doing.
It's totally cool. It's totally cool.
I don't even know if any of those things were. So.
It's been an enjoyable process for sure. I feel like I've, in this process of working together, have also kind of been your test dummy. Like if it works with me, then it might work with the demographic because a lot of your demo is kind of people like me, but also older. You definitely, the lead demographic here is like young BIPOC professionals who have an interest in F&B and like people who like to splurge on a nice dinner and experience. I'm definitely the lead, the fan, the sucker for this. I'm like, oh, give it to me, more cheese. Because then in this process, I'm educating my roommates on cheese. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, guys, look what I got today with my day with Kira. And so I come back home and I tell them all about it as well. And they're just like, wow, you're like really getting into this. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I fucking am.
Yeah.
But my favorite process or one of my favorite things I've done with you thus far is going to CMI. The Mojo and I came over, well, the Mojo team and I came to support Kira at the CMI, which is the Cheesemonger Invitational. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know you've participated in it before, but I have never seen something like this in cheese. I have seen it in alcohol, like in Speed Rack, you know? Speed Rack is a female bartending competition. All funds are raised for breast cancer awareness. And of course, hello, it exists for cheese. Why did I not think of this? But talk about it, please.
Our little niche industry. We have fun too. The Cheesemonger Invitational, the brainchild of Adam Moskowitz, owner of Columbia Cheese, which is an import and distributor out of Larkin in Astoria, Queens. So 10 years ago, he and the cheese people back then wanted to have a big party and they didn't really know how to. And they saw this prestigious cheesemonger competition in Europe going on every year. And so they wanted to do something similar, but like in our super American way. So they did it in the storage building of where the cheese is kept and they just got some crates and just started doing this competition. Fast forward 10 years, having taken 2 years off from the pandemic, it's basically a 2-day competition, but mixed with networking. So the first thing with the Cheesemonger Invitational is you get opportunities to be face-to-face with cheese makers, farmers, producers that you've been essentially working for, in quotes, for months, years. So it's super fun. My first experience, I got to meet cheese makers and mongers that and producers that I had been selling for a couple years, and it's like a fangirl moment,
yeah,
right?
Putting a face to the name.
And what it basically does is it nurtures my knowledge and our relationship. So when I go back to my cheese counter, I now have this personal interaction with the farmer. So I'm probably gonna sell your cheese that much more because I have even more information, more respect, and just more to give to the customers. So 2 days you're meeting these producers, but you're also networking with other cheesemongers. So when I first started, it was a great way to like meet people, but coming back this time, it was kind of getting my face back into the game. Mm. Having been out for a few years, I didn't really know any of the cheesemongers. So I made a bunch of new friends and they got to learn from me too, having had more experience wrapping and cutting cheese. I was able to also reassure me that I was in the right place.
Yes.
Okay, so 2 days of just chatting and learning, and then the big competition is what Joe and the team came to, and it's an evening event where 20 of us were judged on various categories. There are a couple categories that involve actually preparing food with cheese. Mm-hmm. And so I won first place in the Perfect Bite, which I did a Southern African-American inspired flavor using a cheddar cheese I was assigned. I called my mama's Perfect Bite, and it was like peach jam, sweet potato biscuit, fried chicken skin, and this cheddar cheese. And so I won first place with that Perfect Bite. And then with the total scores, the top five people were picked to go on stage. I was lucky enough to make it to the stage. Super grateful.
I cried. She tried to hide it, and I was like,
and my shoulders be going, and like, it don't matter. I cried.
I thought you were laughing, but then I like looked closer and I was like, oh, she crying. Well, that's ugly. And then I started crying. My intern started crying. I was like, oh shit.
You never know in those environments. And I
knew what it meant
I'm
for you.
I'm not behind a counter. So like, I'm not the traditional type of cheesemonger anymore. Also, I don't look like other people in a lot of ways, and I don't, I don't see monger. So it was just, it was validating, and I was able to show my skill. I was able to fall on my face a little bit on stage, reminding myself that I'm still rusty. But I had a lot of fun, and I ended up tying for third place at the end of the day. So yeah, it was a fantastic competition. If you're on social at the Cheesemonger Invitational, lots of photos of everyone, and it's just a good time. There's guests, you can buy tickets, but there's more importantly, there's sponsored tables. So you also get to talk to the producers that we got to talk to for 2 days. You get to taste the cheeses that they are making and selling. So you get to learn what we learn also if you attend. There's one in January in San Francisco, and traditionally the summer, the New York CMI is in July. Mm. They're usually connected to the fancy food shows. Fancy food shows happen in San Francisco in January and New York City in July. So
amazing. Yeah. Thanks for dropping that gem on there. I see what you did. This might be a little disruptive of me to say.
Let's do it.
But you know, we like stirring a pot every now and then. And in the theme of spooky season, you see what I did there? I had a blast at CMI, but to be honest, I could probably count the amount of BIPOC people on my two hands that were in the room.
Yeah.
Yes, as much as I loved putting, faces to names, because I have gotten to know a lot of these brands through you, but I also was familiar with a few of them from our time in Boston. Mm-hmm. And then just becoming really passionate about your demographic and your mission with Own Your Funk. I think it's become very clear to me the gap of inclusivity that is in the cheese and dairy industry. And something that we constantly slightly surf is the fact that you're sort of the quote unquote token Black girl within the industry. How do you feel about this? I know you and I talk about it often, but I want you to just spill your guts.
Yes. And before I spill my guts, I got to give my fellow Black cheesemongers a call out, because when we say things like token, it's not in like the holistic entire world of cheesemongering. It's in the East Coast and sort of the world that I've created in my cheese industry. Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of people who look like me. Another silver lining of all this chaos of the last couple of years with BLM movements and things, I've been able to create solid relationships with Black cheesemongers around the country, around the world. So that network is solid. So I just want to make sure that I call attention to that before moving into this disruptive talk.
Absolutely.
But in the CMI context, and a lot of the work I've done over the years where I've traveled with Culture Cheese Magazine around the country, which is a cheese magazine to educate mongers around the country. So I've been around the country. I've seen mongers. So I can say things like token with confidence because I've been in the environments where I'm the only one. So there are positives and negatives to any environment that you stand out, right? I mean, I work in marketing. I went to school for marketing. I'm not, I don't ignore the benefits to being the only person who looks the way I look in the industry. On top of that, I pride myself in the fact that there's reasons to call me out beyond the way I look, my talents, I hope, and my beauty and my humor.
Your boyish good looks.
You know, all that jazz. But the negatives are the things that I focus more on that no one gets to feel or I don't ever show. Mm. It's the way I speak. It's the way I present information about cheese. So there's definitely insecurities in some way for being the token, and more frustration than not, because year after year, the cheese industry, again, I say it as if there's meetings we have underground, but it is a small niche industry where we have Facebook groups and we all kind of know each other, sort of. And so we ask each other these questions, how can we grow the industry? How can we continue to sell and you know, grow these farmers and continue their livelihoods because the pandemic, you know, really hurt these people. And so now it's like every year I'm like, Black people, people of color, like, let's just sell cheese to the fastest growing demographics. So who have the money, who are traveling the world, becoming more affluent day in, day out. The difficult thing is that they think they have to solve these formulas to how to speak to different types of people instead of just like kind of asking
them. It's fear. They're scared.
Yeah.
They're scared. We live in a call out culture where people are definitely scared to fuck up or say the wrong thing. And you should be, but also be conscious and intentional with
your
marketing. Your
stuff. Just own your stuff. Just start out by saying, I don't know what I'm talking about. I need your help. Or we know we don't have any Black customers, Kiara. You know, we want to have more of them. Or if you're, you know, for me, it's the best part of what I've done so far is when I have a brown cheesemonger come up to me and say they love what I'm doing. Or if I have a person of color who eats cheese, who I've never met before, who loves what I'm doing. I mean, that's sort of what we're trying to do. I'm just trying to build a community so that everyone can be talked about.
Yeah. I mean, let them know. Why is reaching the BIPOC community important and necessary?
I think I'm disappointed that we have to have the conversation as a separate conversation, but that's just where the world is now. I mean, every industry, every business is doing it. It's so, again, for me, it's very obvious when I see DEI work happening for companies. But
what is DEI work for those?
Diversity, equity, and inclusion. So, for example, I can think of like Calvin Klein has this commercial with Michael B. Jordan where he's like on the stoops. And I'm like, if you don't get off that damn stoop and you're Calvin Klein, like it's just like very intentionally trying to reach a certain demographic, which is good because it works. That commercial was cool. They look great. I might have bought something. So just being more intentional with it, I think, is why it's important. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, it gets people out of their own way if we can just begin talking about it with like more intent. So I feel like it's important because like it's just not being done yet. And I don't think anyone really knows how to do it. So
I definitely agree. Like one of the things that happens often in the photo and fashion industry is, for example, like when the first Black woman shoots the cover of Vogue, it's like an accolade. It's supposed to be an accolade, but at the same time, the industry's like, but why is this the first Black woman ever? And a lot of the conversations that are coming up with a lot of people of color being first, it's like, okay, yeah, being the first is cool, but like, damn, it took this long for me to be the first. I don't want to be the first. I want to be in a pool of many with my community and my people, you know? Why is reaching the BIPOC community necessary and important in Cheese and Dairy?
I think for me, the education is more of like a food education just in general. I feel like African-American people, whom I can only speak to because that's what I am, I feel like our palates are often stunted or we're just not sort of exposed to flavors or things beyond a certain point. And so food deserts and food insecurities and all these things, yes, they are due to access, but a lot of it has to do with just a lack of interest or want. They don't want to eat anything beyond American cheese or, you know, they don't know anything beyond that flavor profile. So
there's
a
combativeness.
Exactly. That,
like, it's like there's a complaint where it's like, fuck, like we don't nobody want to teach me enough about cheese. But also it's like if I invite you to a cheese event, are you going to say yes? You know, are you curious? Are you hungry to learn more?
And so I think like just it's necessary because I think there's an educational gap within like food knowledge. When you look at different demographics of people, I mean, Black people sure are traveling the world, but when they go there, what are they eating when they get there? Are they trying the local foods? Like, and I feel like there's opportunities to get them prepared for that, you know, through fun experiences. Again, it's not going to be like your Cheese 101 event. So my goal is they see the intent behind it in offering something in a new way and it's appealing. And so I feel like it's necessary for the knowledge to get to the community. And so whatever way we get it there, I think is of a benefit. And from there, you can really just teach the younger generations about food and about education and then just make better food choices.
No, I definitely agree with that. And it's kind of like teaching old dogs old ways. We really got to expand our brain, our palate, our curiosity, the child within us that literally wanted to touch and taste everything. You know, it's kind of dialing back to that juvenile curiosity that we used to have and we kind of callous over as we
and
get older.
And so much of our confidence, I think, so much of my confidence came from an understanding of how to take care of my body, right? And so for me, that started with food. And so I think even if you don't have food allergies or any issues with what you put into your body, you should still be very mindful of how you're taking care of it and what you're putting into your body. And I feel like that part of the self-empowerment is the deeper message that I think as a people is lacking, and mm-hmm. any way to get confidence into people yeah. is a good thing. Self-confidence is a huge thing, and like just feeling better about your food choices. And, you know, as places continue to gentrify and having these beautiful markets in parts of New York City where people may not understand why they're there, mm-hmm. But there are actually benefits to them being there, but they don't know that yet. Like, you know, how can we get people to understand that this is good for them too? Having access to local vegetables, having access to New York City made products is a good thing. You know, how do we make these smaller markets like Formaggio appealing to these demographics? And so, right. yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Yeah, these gentrified locations are totally opening up. What would you say is a great way to start penetrating the young generations to become curious about cheese?
Mm-hmm. Well, aside from, you know, older generations educating them and, you know, not having them be better than they are, right?
I'm
actually on the board of an awesome new nonprofit called the Cheese Culture Coalition, started by a dear friend of mine, Whitney Roberts, who was a cheesemaker turned cheesemonger. Discovering more about her ethnic background, found her family of African-American descent owning farmland in Virginia. Diving into that story, she really uncovered the value in farming and starting at a young age. So Cheese Culture Coalition, our mission is basically to educate and empower disenfranchised youth, specifically BIPOC communities. So we offer free educational classes for people of color, and then we're just about to launch a grant scholarship program for anyone in the food industry, agriculture, farming, cheese, to apply for grants for whatever they want to do.
Amazing. I love that. Oh my gosh. I mean, like, I'm thinking back to when I was in school and, you know, when you had to take those cooking classes to like home ec classes, yeah. I'm like, fuck, if one of our classes was like cheese 101, you know, like understanding cheese and dairy, that would have been so cool to have learned instead of like how to make pancakes.
Even though
that's useful too now.
I only ate orange cheese until I realized that was the dyed cheese, not like the white cheese was the good.
Right.
I always threw cheese away if it was moldy. No idea that like most good cheese is mostly mold.
Yeah.
So just there's like, as much as cheese is a niche and a small industry, the information and the fact that it's a living, breathing food can be applied to every living, breathing thing, I feel like. And that's what I've been able to do. Again, I think having the gastronomy timing of when I learned about cheese made for this knowledge to kind of just live in my brain in a way that like, I don't need to really refresh ever. Like when I learn about a cheese, it's up there and then I can, yeah, it's just something I've always loved and I want to share.
For sure. Apart from being a cheesemonger, what other opportunities are there in the cheese and dairy industry that you think?
Endless possibilities. The beautiful thing about cheese and dairy is that you can kind of do whatever you want. The whole idea is not to waste it. You know, your cheese is controlled.
Say it a little louder for the people in the back.
It's not to waste it, vegans. The idea is to not to waste the milk. And so cheese is controlled spoilage. So beyond that, you can follow traditions and do things exactly how people have done in the past. Like if you want to make a Swiss style cheese or a Roquefort or, you know, blue specific style of cheese or a brie, you know, there are things that you do exactly the same to do that, but you can do whatever you want with cheese. Because of that means you can sell cheese, you can educate cheese, you can teach about cheese. The opportunities are endless. But beyond being a cheesemonger and just being a cheese maker and a cheese seller, I really think the opportunities are definitely in the other parts of the food and beverage industry. So just strengthening front of house staff on when they do sell cheese. I think Copa was a great restaurant where their staff had trainings. They knew exactly what cheese they were selling every week. And you don't have to do that, but if everybody that's talking about cheese, so there's opportunities for growth if you work in the restaurant industry. You know, I think restaurants can have benefits to having a cheesemonger on staff or a cheese professional
on
staff.
Like they have a sommelier, yeah.
Exactly. And then I really feel like I challenge people to create their own paths in the cheese industry. I think being a cheesemonger, you're left with so much intellectual property that you then can translate and transcribe in any way you want. They're two of my really good friends in the industry, just both are launching books at the same time. And it's like, you see cookbooks all the time. And I'm always like, how can you have so many dang cookbooks? And now I'm seeing two of my friends with cheese books. I'm like, they're very different books. And I can see 10 more cheese books out there, you know? So writing about it, blogging about it, or other ways to sell yourself in the industry, you know, it's being a cheesemonger, I think, is a great way in. A lot of people then go to sales or back into the making industry. But for me, having tried to leave a couple times and being sucked back in, I created my own business.
Yeah. I mean, guys, let's get back to it. The whole purpose of this podcast and of what I do with my career is I am a retired front of the house bartender, now F&B marketing and PR owner. Kira is one of my clients and the mojo continues to expand. You can definitely pave your own career. I created the mojo because I had 15 years worth of food and beverage knowledge living rent-free in my brain. And I was like, fuck, I got to share this with the world. Otherwise, it was all for nothing. Oh, yeah. And so here I am doing this. And here you are making your own business. And it's definitely possible. You know, my parents talked me out of working in the restaurant industry. But all it did was pave my future and into now being an entrepreneur and a business owner. So you really could just grab an opportunity by the balls and dictate your own life and your own future.
And parents come around. You know,
they do.
My parents, my dad's a doctor, mom's an executive of a nonprofit. They did not like their children being sneaker designers and cheesemongers. they were like, how did we go wrong? You know, but my brother paved his own way and I've paved my own way. And I just think more and more people are going to do it, especially again, the catalyst of the pandemic has allowed for us to take these side hustles and figure them out. And it's going to change the way every industry works, I feel like, in terms of like people focusing again on their mental health, you know, and doing work that makes them happy first and then backing into the paycheck.
You know, there was a lot of blessings in this pandemic but you know, of course there was the cons, the negatives that were obvious, but for those of us that still have our health, it was an excellent time to prioritize mental health. And it seemed like it was the perfect time for the world to go through it in unison. Mm. No one's going through it alone. We're all going through it together.
We all got those 28 days I was talking about.
We all went through it together. And I think that's kind of the poetic part of surviving a pandemic. Jesus Christ. Mm. I guess I want to know, what does a future look like where you feel you know you did a good job?
Dang.
I know.
I'm too deep for that, Joe.
I'll be out here.
Joe be knowing that. I just, okay, focus, Kira. You can do it. One answer. Keep myself focused on what we're talking about and where Own Your Funk is starting in the food and cheese farming industry. I mean, I just want a bunch of brown people on a farm eating cheese, listening to some hip hop. I feel like that's just, and knowing why they're there, you know, not just being there because it's a cool thing they saw on TikTok or a cool Instagram page, knowing that they're there to support the cow named Molly over there and the goat named Sally and wanting to do that. I think caring about our land, I mean, we just get so confused with what matters and it's easy to fill our brains, but if you just dumb it down to simplicity, and for me, it's cheese. I think just loving on it, appreciating it, doesn't have to be, you don't have to change your life around it. Just hang out, have a good time. And yeah, just, I don't know.
Vibe out.
Yeah.
Keep it funky, guys. Keep it funky.
I don't have big, I think for me, it's, I want to bring value to other people. And I feel like the best way I can do that is through giving experiences. That's the strength of mine. And so for now, it's just whatever way we can do that. And I don't want to build an Own Your Funk community by myself. I want to offer a few things and then see what people want. And so I don't know. Yeah, I just want us all to love it all together and love ourselves.
So for those of you who are absolutely as smitten with you as I am, let them know, where can they follow you, Own Your Funk?
So Instagram at Own Your Funk and then www.ownyourfunk.com. Exciting things coming on the website.
Yes.
Yeah, reach out via email or DM. It's just me. So yeah, I'm happy to answer questions or whatever people are looking for. I'm just excited to be available.
Amazing.
Yes. Oh, and my email address is gear@ownyourfunk.com. So all super easy.
Yeet yeet.
Thanks.
There you have it. I feel like that was everything.
Okay, as long as you feel that way, I feel good too.
Well, there you have it, guys. Kira James of Own Your Funk, your first podcast, my client. It's been a privilege watching you grow from Boston to now a business owner and just such an advocate for the BIPOC community. You're doing it. You're killing it.
Thank you.
We're happy to have you.
And we'll keep it up together. Thank you. Woo!